WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. My name is Nicholas Persley, joined as always by Elliot Miller and Adam Hambright. How are we doing, gentlemen?
You know, pretty good. You know, I thought I was going to be able to relax on Saturday. You know, they wanted to make things a little interesting. So, you know, there was a time there where I thought I was just going to be really upset coming in today. But, you know, now I'm all right.
You know, I'm having a swell time as an Alabama fan, but the city of Pittsburgh weeps as it currently sits. The Steelers have lost, the Pirates have lost, and the Penguins are losing currently.
But so. Hey, the Steelers are still in first place, the AFC North.
They are. At least it could be worse. I could be a Browns fan.
Mm, so true. Or an Eagles fan. Baker Mayfield.
Cowboys got a bye week this week.
They played the Giants on
Thursday. They already played. Who cares about the Thursday night game? Anyway.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch. I don't know that I can put myself
through that. Known Cowboys fan not watching the Cowboys.
Oh, man. Truly tragic. So, I don't know. You guys tell me. I mean, I didn't really know of it. Was there a game this week?
You know, I think there was something going on. A bunch of people went over to Bryant-Denny. You know, they might have just been, like, showing some kind of movie or something.
I had to go through TSA.
Yeah, well, it's funny. And I don't even know if it was here. I think, like, you got into the stadium so you could watch it on the screen. My dad called me and he said, you know, there's a football game and it's between, like, Pitt and someone else. They're ranked, like, number one and number, like, three or something. And I'm like, oh, wait, that's soccer. But
the other football.
I don't even know where to go with that one. Anyway, Alabama, Georgia, billed as the game of the year, the game of the season. I would say it lived up to the hype.
You know, I was really hoping it wasn't, especially with about, 11 minutes left to go in the second quarter. Alabama's up 28-0. I was hoping they could just keep their foot on the gas and we could have a nice, relaxing coast into the end of the game. And then, you know, things happen. Second half, Georgia storms back, takes the lead, and then, you know, I've had so many of these now where it's just like amazing games that I've been to. That one might be the best game that I've been like in attendance for. I got home, I immediately bought the commemorative ticket. You know, I had to with all the stats and stuff. So, you know, I think it definitely lived up to at least game of the year.
I think it lived up to my expectations. I distinctly remember last week, a particular individual on this show, might have been me, who said, I don't know which version of which team is going to show up. And guess what? Both teams brought out both.
We got four different teams in the same game.
I watched the Kentucky-Georgia team, and I watched the like Alabama-Western Kentucky version. And then in the second half, I saw like the USF Alabama team, and then I saw like the Georgia, whichever FCS school they played version. So, anyway,
You want to take a bad. We should go back to when we made our predictions for the year. I believe it was Elliot who did say that would be the game that Alabama lost.
I did. So I also said that they would lose to OU, which,
you know, honestly, that does. I'm gonna let's hold off on the OU one because that might not be that bad of a prediction.
Yo, them winning down their top five receivers, by the way. Can we put that in perspective?
Absolutely
real quick?
Wild. Yeah, it was tragic. Did you also see the Auburn absolute tragedy of they like run the field goal team out there, miss. Oh. Penalty on Oklahoma, you get another chance, even further left. Truly tragic.
Yeah. See, I didn't see that because, you know, I was already in the stadium and they were trying to show football games, but they show like 5 seconds from one, then go to another one, and they just kept swapping back and forth. And then, you know, with an hour and a half to kick off, that's when they just did their regular.
At what time was that? Because I think I was busy in the TSA/Secret Service line. You know, like trying to get in.
Like most people.
Yeah.
I don't know the last time that I genuinely showed up 3 hours before a game, but I was extremely glad that I did it because that line was unbelievable.
Yeah, so me, I got there. So gates technically opened at like 3:45. You know, they said they were going to open up 4. They even opened up a little bit earlier. I was there at 2 p.m. And, you know, I still got my normal seat, but I got there, there were already people up on the barrier right there. And that was, you know, that's 2 hours before gates open, another 2.5 hours till kickoff, you know. But, hey, it was worth it for me.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think that you can say that entire ordeal, given all the given how great the game was, I don't think you can say that it wasn't worth it, right? So let's talk about that game. We talked about how we saw multiple versions of each team. In the first half, genuinely, I do not know that I've ever seen Carson Beck play so terrible. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was jitters or something. He looked completely different in the second half. But that first half was painful to watch. Some of these decisions that he was making were just, it's one of those, you know, you're hitting the Will Levis, like, as soon as you see it come out of his hand. What do we think was going on with Carson Beck?
See, I'm not entirely sure what was going on in the first half. Obviously, he ends up with over 400 passing yards. He did have, I think it was 47 passing attempts. He was about 50% completions and ended up with over 400 yards, mostly in the second half. The first half, though, you know, I mentioned it last week when we were going into the game, how he had only been sacked once. He, you know, there was a little bit of pressure in the Kentucky game, but still had only been sacked once on the year. And I was hoping that Alabama's defensive line and linebackers on blitzes could get pressure on him to make those bad decisions. But some of those decisions were happening, you know, way before. Like, I mean, obviously there were times when he was pressured, he was sacked a couple of times, but sometimes it just looked like it was bad throws. Like, it didn't even look like the pressure had got there before he's already throwing it away.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that's fair. I don't know if it's necessarily, like, all completely on Carson Beck. I thought there were a couple times it really kind of felt like he had, like, the right idea on what was, like, the play was supposed to be, where it was supposed to go. And it's like, I just don't think they were on the same page, him and his receivers. Maybe even picking up pressures on, like, I know that before the game they're talking about, like, this stimulated pressure thing that Alabama's defense. I forget. It was like some weird thing. Essentially faking the fact that the outside linebackers are going to blitz, and then they ended up they drop in coverage, and then they pull the middle linebacker in, was the general idea of, like, the play type. But I don't even think it was, like, I don't know. It just, the things were discombobulated, yeah. But Alabama, I think, for him, it was more, I need to go bar for bar, flow for flow with Milroe, because I was honestly more shocked with how Alabama came out firing more than how bad Carson Beck was to start the game.
Yeah, I think easily, I think I can say this without a doubt in my mind, it's the best game I've ever seen Jalen Milroe play.
Well,
and
for the first.
The offense. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, honestly, for the whole game, I mean, in my opinion, the play calling got extremely relaxed in the second half. I mean, you saw Alabama doing things in the first half that you have never seen Alabama do before. Milroe walking away, direct snap to the running back. That was sick. And then, like, a couple plays later, you've got, like, a quadruple lateral attempt that I think would have gone for a touchdown had I don't remember who it was. It was one of the linemen just completely oblivious to the guy coming in to blow up the play.
Yeah,
but
I know which player you're talking about. Yeah,
you saw some crazy stuff. I mean, it looked like they were going for the throat in the first half, and then in the second half, it's just completely relaxed. It seems like you're just trying to bleed out the clock, and then you're snapping the ball with 20 seconds left.
That's the thing, though. So, since you brought it up, I'll mention it. The thing I really didn't dig, and I don't know whether this is necessarily the player or whether this is the coaching. I don't care who it is, because I just disagree with it in general. That's fine. I'm not the one out there. I do not understand the concept of running plays to bleed the clock, per se, but you snap it when half the play clock is left. That does not make sense. It is inexplicable how much time was left on the clock, especially on those resulting possessions that Georgia had, where they kept scoring in like three plays. Granted, they only scored in three plays, so it really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things because they scored so quick. But, like, you cannot justify a halfback draw up the middle and then I'm going to snap it with 20 seconds left and then run the exact same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a lot of the reason why you saw Alabama's defense kind of start to fail in the second half was it was a little bit of two things, right? Georgia finally came alive. Carson Beck played like, you know, he knew how to play football in the second half, you know, like we're used to a guy who many thought was going to be the first quarterback off the board. We can talk about that at some point. And then it was also Alabama's offense failing to sustain long drives, and the defense was out there for what felt like eternity.
Well, I wouldn't even say it failed to sustain. I mean, it was three and out. It wasn't even like I got a first down. This was quite literally, I ran it three times, I maybe got 7 yards, and then I punted it straight back, and I took only, but because they're only snapping it with 20 seconds left, it's actually even less time. Like with these play, like the what, the play takes 7 minutes to develop, and then they're snapped it with 20 seconds on the play clock left. So it's like each play is taking like 30 seconds, like a minute and a half, kick it right back.
Well, you know, and the thing for me is that, like, you know, you kind of mentioned, you know, feeling not whatever about Milroe in the second half. I really don't think it's on Milroe, because early in the game, you saw him making all the right decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
That throw, the second touchdown on the wheel route, was one of the best throws I think I've ever seen.
That might be the best throw he's ever made in his career.
I'm pretty sure that you could stick a piece of paper between the Georgia defender's helmet and the ball. I mean, that pass is just money. Milroe was cooking the entire time, in the first half at least, and he was making all the right decisions. That's the thing that you have to see. You know, Georgia wasn't giving up big bombs down the field as much. You know, eventually you got it, but he was taking a lot of the short stuff, a lot of the easy throws. It looked very easy. Even on that first drive, when you saw Alabama kind of face some adversity, self-created adversity, given, you know, illegal formation, holding, that sort of thing, they still end up scoring relatively easy on the first drive. And then all of a sudden you look up and it's 28-0, and I don't think a single person in the country could have predicted that.
Yeah, and even to that degree, I don't even think that the interception he threw is on him. I've never seen
that's such a freak
like way that a ball pops out on a hit like straight into the guy's hands. That's like a totally
truly like, tragic.
Complete accident, yeah, tragic thing. I guess my thing, yeah, making all the right decisions. I thought the best thing that he did was especially on plays that kind of seemed like they were blown up or maybe they were designed, but Georgia had a really big problem in the first half containing the edge. They could not go sideline to sideline.
Which was something, to Kirby's credit, you saw completely get shut down in the second.
Yes, the problem is that it was like, okay, well, it was obvious on the first couple of like possessions from Alabama that Georgia was like, yeah, you're not getting the edge anymore. Okay, that's just not going to happen. But it was like, hey, what if we tried to run it on the edge again? And then it'd get like blown up. And I was like, okay, like it's been pretty obvious now that the last two possessions, they're not going to let you do that. It's like, let's just keep trying it and see if it works again. Like, I don't know. I just disagree with that.
For me, you know, obviously, you know, the first drive, you know, every coordinator, head coach, you know, they always have that first drive scripted. So seeing Alabama go down the first drive scoring touchdown did not surprise me. Then, you know, as it started getting more, like you were saying, Nick, you know, up 28-0. Nobody would have predicted 28-0. Now, after that, you know, Kirby Smart makes those adjustments at halftime. Can't get to the outside. But also, it was like the entire defensive front. Like, you couldn't get to the outside. You also couldn't run up the middle. And I didn't understand why there weren't more efforts. Because, like we mentioned earlier, you know, it wasn't really like they were trying to run out the clock. You know, they're snapping it, you know, halfway through the play clock. But you're not throwing it down the field. And the two times they actually did throw it down the field, you have the juggling catch by Ryan Williams, and then you have the touchdown that seals the game or puts Alabama ahead, that eventually was the game-winning touchdown. And after you get the fumble, when they make Carson Beck fumble, they get the ball at about the 50-yard line. Why not go deep right there, try to get the – because if you score right there, it's 40-15. You might not have, you know, the furious Georgia comeback to where they take the lead. And, you know, I think if Alabama gets in a situation like that again, I would have liked to have seen it in this game, but if they get in a situation like this in some of their other games, I think Alabama might have learned their lesson, might just get their foot on the gas a little bit longer. But, yeah, it was – you know, it was good to watch. I just wish, you know, a little bit better adjustments on the Alabama side once Georgia had made those adjustments.
Yeah, honestly, the exact drive that you just described, the one where they got the Carson Beck fumble around midfield, to me, that was the worst possession of the game. You just cannot squander opportunities like that, and to go not only to not get any points, like you're on it on the cusp of field goal range, you get like a first down, maybe two, and you're there, But to not be able to even get a first down, I mean, like, this was a three and out, and this was like a bad three and out. That was ugly. I don't know. I think that that was part of what set the tempo for Georgia. They're like, hey, you know what? We can get back in this game. We can turn the ball over. It's not a huge deal. You know, we're still in it. So maybe it's part of like a, and maybe that's what got Carson Beck going. He's like, you know what? I can play risk free. I can turn the ball over. It doesn't really matter. Like, my guys are still there supporting me. So.
Yeah.
And we might get a rematch of this game later in the year. There's a couple of different chances for that this year.
Yeah, potentially. We'll talk about that. I mean, it's so weird to have a matchup like this in week five. I think, like, you watch last night's game and you're thinking, oh man, this has got big implications. And then you kind of forget it's week five. We haven't really seen much from either of these teams. It was both teams for, well, actually, that's not true. It was Georgia's second SEC contest after the Kentucky game, Alabama's first. So let's talk about Ryan Williams. First off, did you guys know he's 17 years old?
I've heard it once or twice. You know,
I might have read it a couple times. It might have been on Twitter, though.
Look, first off, an absurd game. I mean, I believe he had 177 yards for the game. Far and away the most of any Alabama receiver. You see them immediately go to him on the very first play of the game. You kind of, I'll say it is very interesting that they have kind of realized that they have this weapon and they're already utilizing him like a number one receiver. Like, I don't even think you can argue that he's the number one receiver in that room at this point.
Yeah, I definitely think, especially the connection between him and Milroe has just been so good, especially for someone who, you know, he didn't even get to practice in the spring. You know, he wasn't enrolled in the school yet. You know, he graduated early so that he could be at Alabama, you know, this early. But, you know, this was a guy, he was way behind any other receiver in the room when just, like, you know, they weren't even able to really practice, you know, actual, like, football practice until the fall. And, you know, all of a sudden, like you saw it, you know, week one, you know, scores, you know, I think it was 2 touchdowns on that one. And then he scored in every game, and it's just like, how is the connection so good between them when they've had so, like, even Jeremy Bernard, you know, he transferred in, but he had the whole spring, and, you know, all these other receivers. It's good because Williams is, like, the number one, but if you do have to go to a number two, like, you still have Jeremy Bernard, you still have Kobe Prentice, like, you have all these other guys that could be the number one if Ryan Williams wasn't there.
It feels like a deep receiver room, which is something that I don't think we've been able to say for the last couple of years. Maybe it's been semi-deep, but they haven't really had that true star talent. And I don't think that anybody in this country can honestly tell you that Ryan Williams is not a star in the making. But the other thing to me is, like, you keep waiting for the youth to show up. You keep waiting for a game where it's kind of like, you know, he makes some rookie mistakes. Maybe he has a drop or, you know, a boneheaded play. But it just seems like he's mature beyond his years, because just when you think you've seen it all, you know, you see that incredible juggling catch. He makes the grab, spin move, makes two Georgia defenders collide into each other and scores the game-winning touchdown. I mean, it was just absurd, and I don't know. It was almost like you couldn't believe it when it happened.
Sure. You know, speaking a little bit to the depth of the wide receiver room, I'll play a little game real quick. If you had to guess who the second wide receiver in receiving, I mean, that's probably pretty easy, but would you know what the number of receiving yards is? So, for context, Ryan Williams on the season has 462 receiving yards. So, who do you think is the second receiver in receiving yards, and how many do you think he has? Without looking.
I'd say in the 200 range.
But who?
Law?
No.
No?
Adam?
You know, I'm looking at the list. Like, I don't have, like, the season, but, you know, we have, you know, Bernard, Law, Kobe Prentice, and those would kind of be, like, the guys you want to go with. And for me, I think, you know, it's either going to be Emmanuel Henderson Jr. or one of the running backs. That's my opinion.
Okay, so it's actually – it is Jeremy Bernard, but he only has 150 yards on the season. There are only two wide receivers on the roster with over 100 yards receiving on the season. The next one is Kobe Prentice at 92.
Yeah, and it gets even funnier when you look at the touchdowns. 5 for Ryan Williams. Nobody else has more than one.
Yeah.
It's very, like, I know last year, and, you know, they were making big plays. But really, the last time I think we saw, you know, just any, you know, you still can't even compare it, because the offense that comes to mind when I'm thinking of this is when you had Jameson Williams and John Metchie. And, you know, they were both doing it. You know, this one is like Ryan Williams has taken over, like, both those guys' stats, and everybody else is just kind of there. But, you know, I think you would expect this to have been the game, like you were saying. You know, everybody's waiting for that game where, you know, somebody shuts them down, or, like, the mistakes are happening. You would have kind of expected it to have been this game against Georgia. If you look at the rest of the schedule, like, Georgia's going to be the best defense Alabama faces all year, at least until you get to a playoff.
Tennessee, I mean, the defense looked very, very good against Oklahoma. Now, we don't know how good Oklahoma really is. That is to be seen. But it looks like the Tennessee defense may be elite.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll find out in a couple of weeks. You know, once we see, you know, Tennessee go up against some better teams. But if I'm Alabama, and right now I don't, like you, we were just talking about how, you know, the 2 and 3 receivers aren't really getting that much. Like, just having those guys that you know can produce if there is a game when Ryan Williams isn't working, which right now, you know, it might not happen. He might play himself into the Heisman race. Who knows? But if you're going to be like, okay, Ryan Williams isn't going to be, you know, the guy today, and I still have Bernard, Prentice, Henderson, even Dupree at the tight end. You know, they targeted Dupree a lot in the game this week, and obviously there was the one interception that went off his hands. But, you know, I feel very confident with the receiving group, even though you haven't seen the production from the other guys.
Absolutely. And that's why I brought up that stat. So I will pose one final question. So based on what you saw, what do you think is the outcome of the game when Georgia goes to visit the Texas Longhorns?
Ooh, man, I think there's a lot to unpack there. Just to kind of go quickly, I'll say that, you know, I do think this is probably going to be the worst game that we see Carson Beck play all year. I don't think you're going to see another one of these. Though it is interesting that Georgia has 2 extremely difficult road tests this year. They had to come to Alabama. They have to go to Texas. Arch Manning has that team looking insane. I think it's going to be a difficult decision to make when eventually Quinn Ewers does come back. I think it is going to be his team when he comes back. I think you might see some pushback from some of the fan base, especially if, you know, if you saw that throw that he makes at the end of the first half. He's getting hit, throws up a bomb. I mean, money ball. It's just a different, you know, you're seeing something special there. But it is going to be interesting. I think we're really going to tell, it's going to tell us a lot about both these teams. Honestly, if I had to pick the game right now, I would say Georgia, just because I really don't see Georgia getting punched in the mouth twice. I would expect it to be a much closer game, 28-0 lead for anybody. But that's a real type of test for Texas. I don't know that we've seen Texas, since they've been quote unquote back, be tested that type of way. I mean,
absolutely not.
Obviously, they came here last season and they beat Alabama here in Bryant-Denny. I don't think that Alabama gave them the best of games.
If it's not in week 2 before, you know, Milroe's able to develop into what he became at the end of last season.
Right. You know. And then, you know, they make the college football playoff, given that's new for them. So that's a big step. But then you lose to Washington.
But they had the claw back in. That was more Washington let Texas back in the game. I mean, they were getting the doors, like, blown off of them to start.
Kind of sounds familiar.
So, I don't know. So, in my opinion, I would say it's Georgia right now, but we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams. It's really great that we get to see both of them play each other this year. The only way that it could be better is if we got to see Alabama-Texas pre-SEC championship game, which potentially we could be looking at that down the road.
I just want to – I'm looking at the Georgia schedule. So, they'll play – at Texas on October 19th, they got 2 games to tune up for it, and it's Auburn and Mississippi State. And I'm just wondering, will the Georgia defense, with how much they were able to get beat in the passing game, like at Milroe, I think it was 374 passing yards, you know, they're not, unless something changes with the two teams, like those passing offenses, I don't think are going to really test Georgia. So it's really going to be that Texas game before we see, like, have they learned from their mistakes against Alabama.
100%. Elliot, anything to close with that?
I'm taking the Dogs over the Longhorns. I just do not see them. I think they're going to be pretty upset after what happened in this game. I do not think that Texas – I looked at their schedule, who they've played this season. Colorado State, non-factor. Quite frankly, I'm not impressed with Michigan whatsoever. I do not think that's an impressive win, despite what people say. UTSA, non-factor. L.A. Monroe, non-factor. They had a really rough time with Mississippi State for about 70% of that game. I would take Georgia head-to-head, no matter what the context is.
All right. So when we come back here on 90.7 The Capstone, we're going to try something new. So stick around. This show is a sports production of WVUAFM 90.7, a division of student media at the University of Alabama. Support us by leaving a review, rating, or following us on X at WVUAFM Sports. Welcome back into Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. Nicholas, Adam, and Elliot. I almost said Joe again. I don't know why. Maybe we need to get Joe back on eventually. So we're going to try something new in this segment. We're going to do hot or not. Okay, I'm going to give a take, and you guys are going to let me know whether it is a hot take or not a hot take. You ready?
I'm ready.
Sure.
As ready as you're going to be?
Sure.
Okay. First take. Georgia and Alabama will play again this season, including the postseason.
You know, I think...
Well, I mean, including like the playoff. Not, yeah. Of course, they're not going to play in the regular season.
There's a strong chance. You know, they might end up playing three times. So I think twice is not that hot of a take. You know, it could be an SEC championship. We'll see what happens when they go to Texas. We'll see what happens at Ole Miss, the Tennessee game they're going to have. You know, they have a pretty tough schedule, but if they win out, they'll probably be in Atlanta. And then, you know, Alabama. Like, there's a couple of games that we'll get a better feel as we go through the season. But, you know, if it's not the SEC championship game, I don't see either one of these teams not making the playoff. Like, just personal opinion. So I think if it's not in the SEC championship, I think they will play in the playoff.
That's not a hot take at all. I really take. I'm just going to retweet what Adam just said. I really just don't think that's a hot take at all.
Okay. All right, Alabama will remain the number one ranked team in the AP poll for the rest of the year.
You know, now it's a very difficult question.
The thing that makes it interesting for me is that in my mind, Alabama would not have to lose to relinquish the number one spot. If Texas was to play Georgia and they were to beat Georgia, I think that they would jump Alabama just given fact that they were ranked higher.
Yeah, so I will say it is not a – what was the statement again? Just a quick
– Alabama will remain number one for the rest of the season.
We looked at a couple of different of the voters before the show, and even after that game, a lot of them still had – like Alabama was number one. They had 41st place votes, but they ended up – like some of the voters still had Alabama outside the top five. And, you know, that's why I will say that it is – a hot take that they will remain because of the voter biases. If a Texas or somebody ends up having a game like Alabama had against Georgia, or if they have one where it starts off and they don't allow the team to actually make the comeback, then I think they could easily get jumped.
Yeah, I'll disagree. I don't think it's a hot take at all. I think it's a reasonable statement. Obviously, it is TBD depending on what happens in the rest of the games. But, yeah, to your point on the AP poll, yeah, I know what the voters are going to say. Some of them are like, oh, well, they let him back in the game. Honestly, if you are a voter, I'm going to say this candidly. If you are a voter and you watch that game and you're like, you know what? The team that at one point during the half was beating the snot out of the number two team in the country, and they still held on to win that game, and you still don't think that they are a top five team. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Especially when you keep the team that lost in this exact same spot.
Yeah, that's
that is a crazy, crazy thing to do. Okay, I mean, I just don't know how to describe that, but I don't think it's a hot take. I'll say not. It just again TBD.
Okay. Jalen Milroe will be a Heisman finalist. So he makes it to New York.
I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think I've thought he would be a finalist this year, especially after how he finished last season. Ended up, I believe it was finished sixth. Probably should have been fifth, but they still had Jordan Travis up there after the injury. And, you know, if you're looking at who... I mean, right now, today, he jumped up to the best odds, you know, betting odds to win the Heisman. And I think if he continues to play like he's doing, I think it's a no-brainer that he's going to at least be a finalist. But it's really like him, Cam Ward, the running back out of Boise State's been getting some love.
Ashton, is it Gianti? Is it Jaunty? I actually don't know how to pronounce it. I'm so sorry, Ashton. If you're listening to this, that's my bad.
But, yeah, I don't see how he isn't a Heisman. I mean, obviously, if he goes out and just starts playing terrible or gets hurt, but if he stays healthy, I think he will be a Heisman finalist.
I'm going to go again with this is not a hot take. I'm looking at the list. Yeah, obviously, your top five in odds are Jalen Milroe, Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Ashton. I'm just going to go with like Gianti, and then Dylan Gabriel, tied with Nico. This is another last name that I can't – you guys know this is the Tennessee quarterback. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. But just to go to New York, I absolutely believe that he will be there. I don't know if he's going to win. I have a feeling, a sneaking suspicion, that this will wind up going to Cam Ward as long as Miami doesn't lose, although they should have last week. But not a hot take at all.
Not a hot take?
No.
Okay. Let's try this one. Kalen DeBoer will win a title in his first season. SEC or the national championship?
Oh, well, that changes things.
Can he win one of the two?
Okay, so we talked when he was hired, you know, at the time, before Elliot was on the show, and we gave our expectations.
What was Joe's expectations so that way I can maintain the Joe persona?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we all kind of agreed on the expectation. Like, the expectation in the first year was not to win the SEC
championship.
It was just to make the playoff with a 12-team playoff. And, you know, it's interesting. I think it's still too early to tell. If we're going off right now, I will say that it is a hot take because there is just so much more to see. And if we're going, hopefully, like we talked about earlier, learn the lesson, and when they have a chance to shut the door on a team in the future, they'll be able to do that. But until we can really see a game, whether it be LSU, whether it be Tennessee, we're Alabama just plays with the same intensity they had at the beginning. It doesn't have to be 28-0, but with the same intensity throughout the entire game. And that's obviously players, but also the coaching staff, you know, just seeing not to get so conservative play calling wise. I think it is a hot take to say that he will win a championship right now.
And that is even an SEC championship?
Yes.
Okay. Man. It's a tough one. Maybe I'm just really bad at this game. I'm going to have to go with not again. And the only reason I say that is because even with a almost in a Falcon-esque fashion, blowing a lead of sorts with the number 28 involved, okay? There is still somehow some way that a win got managed to be pulled out against arguably like one of the best teams in the SEC. Now, yes, Texas was ranked number one. I think that to me it was a toss-up between Texas and Georgia. I think it's hard to justify. I thought it was hard to justify having Texas at one with some of the characters they've played over the past couple weeks. But I think that it proved that they can have an off day to a certain extent, but still go toe-to-toe with anyone. Because, I mean, let's be honest, they really did not score a whole lot in the second half. That was primarily just first half ball. Really, first quarter ball, if we're being honest.
Yeah, in the second half, they had only had the field goal.
And the touchdown with the two-point conversion. Yeah,
but like that field goal came after the long pass to Ryan Williams that he bobbled. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the touchdown, once again, was Ryan Williams' deep pass. Other than that, you know, I think they had only had maybe two other first downs in the
second
half. Sure,
and of course, cause for concern. Gill get cleaned up, I hope. But it's one of those things where I don't think it's ridiculous to say that that he could win one of them or will win. I think it's entirely possible if they're able to have that many mishaps, I'd say mishaps in quotations, to a certain degree, and still go out and win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he could win a championship. I think the team could. I think they're good enough. I think the coaching is good enough. It's just, for me, I need to see, you know, a full game against a top-tier opponent to where, like you know, they played a full game against Wisconsin, but Tyler Van Dyke goes out in, like, the first drive of the game. I think we just need to see them play an LSU or Tennessee where they play, you know, just non-conservative play calling and just the same intensity the whole way. I mean, I understand the defense got tired, and that's why Georgia was able to score, you know, as much as they moved the ball as much as they were in the second half. But for me, to make the statement, will win a championship in the first year, I need to see that full game from the players and the coaches.
Sure. No, I agree. I just don't think it's a hot take.
Okay, I'll be on the record for he does win one of the two. Am I the only one that's on the record for that?
No, look, I just...
Okay, sorry.
I'm saying he could. The thing
but
is...
But will he? Make the call.
That's the thing.
I think at minimum he'll win the SEC championship.
Okay, so we'll go back to predictions, right? The prediction that was right after the first game, I was on the record saying that they would beat Georgia. I had one loss in the regular season. That was Oklahoma. If I'm making the pick now, I think Alabama will beat Oklahoma, and I do think they will be in the SEC championship. If Alabama gets to Atlanta, I think they will win an SEC championship. So,
okay. All right. Last one before we go to break. That way we can have enough time for beef of the week.
My beef of the week is Nick.
Oh, man, that's crazy. For making you choose. Okay. Ryan Williams will be a Heisman finalist before he leaves Alabama. Now, to put this in context, only four receivers have ever won the Heisman. I'm not saying he has to win. And only five receivers have finished in the top four since 1991, one of which was Amari Cooper. Before he leaves.
We'll see. We've had Amari Cooper, finalist, correct?
Yes.
Devontae Smith won the Heisman.
One, yes.
So we got two of the four that were finalists from Alabama.
Can you name the receiver to win the Heisman before Devontae Smith?
To win the
most
Heisman.
Recent, yes.
Oh, gosh.
1991. You're going to laugh
I'm
when
old.
I tell you
I'm,
who it
that's,
is.
That's still before me, but...
See, I know, like, when he says the name, I know I'm going to know who it is. I just can't think of who it actually
it's
is.
It's a Michigan it, man.
I know.
Desmond
I know he's
Howard.
From Michigan.
Oh, my gosh.
Desmond Howard.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. This is a tough one.
Well, see, it's tough for me because, you know, the connection with Jalen Milroe is so strong, but Jalen Milroe will only be there for this year. Unless something happens, he's going to most likely enter the NFL draft. And I don't know how it'll be with another quarterback. I think he's got the tool set. You know, I made the statement, you know, he looked like Devontae Smith mixed with Jerry Jeudy out there with some of the moves he was able to make. And I think he's definitely got the tools. I don't think it is a hot take to say that he will be a Heisman finalist, especially considering it's been two Alabama guys out of the last four finalists, one being the winner. So I think he can be a finalist.
I'm actually, this is the first one I'm going to say that's a hot take. And it's to your, exactly your sentiment, Milrow is only here for the rest of this year. I do not see a world in which, unfortunately, that Ryan Williams becomes a finalist this year. Maybe the Biletnikoff. I don't know.
Yeah, I felt like that one would have been a little too easy.
No, that's too easy. But I don't know if whoever the quarterback is post Milrow, I don't know if that connection will be as strong or to the same degree. So I'm just gonna say hot take because I just don't see Ryan Williams being a finalist this particular season.
Yeah, I'll say hot take as well. That's it. It's very tough to get there in the first place. Speaking of, okay, you already know Ryan Williams is already a legend at Alabama.
How old is he?
17. Oh, did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Did you see what he forgot?
I'm glad you reminded me.
Yes, I saw it.
Did you see what he changed his Instagram profile picture to?
I did not. I will look it up right now.
A picture.
Well, he had to change it back, or they made him change it back.
A picture of Michael Vick holding a dog. Which, if you'd like to learn more, look up Mike Vick dogs. Okay, no further comments. We'll be back with Beef of the Week here very quickly.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Cap. Stone, Nicholas, Adam, Elliot. One of these days it's just going to naturally flow.
Can you just change your name?
You know? Like,
I'm going to call you Joe now.
This is actually my beef of the week is the fact that Nick still thinks I'm Joe.
That I'm botching. I'm going to write it out and just read off the card like from now on because I keep pump faking. It's like I've got the yips. Okay. Beef of the week, speed run edition. Let's see how concise I can make this. Okay, my beef of the week, and this is probably something that you know much about if you've watched college football at all this season. The fake injuries it is a plague. I do not understand what... Okay, here's the thing. I don't know if you guys watched the Ole Miss-Kentucky game. This had one of the worst fake injuries I have ever seen in my life. And this is coming from somebody who regularly watches professional wrestling. Matt Jones, the running back for Ole Miss, standing right next to Jackson Dart. They're about to run a play. The dude just falls over, and they get a free timeout.
You could even see Jackson Dart like turn around to him and tell him like go down.
Yeah, I mean it is unbelievable how often this is happening. I want to say in that specific game, it was like every three or four plays, somebody was just falling over. I hate it because it's essentially taken an up-tempo offense. Like, it can severely limit it, right? Like, you saw, you know, Alabama try to go up-tempo. You know, Tennessee famously has gone up-tempo a lot before. I think that you're going to start to see less and less of that, at least this season, just because, like, literally you can halt a drive in, like, 2 seconds by just falling over and faking an injury. It is a serious problem. Now, here's the thing. I do not blame the teams for doing it. I do not blame the players for doing it. There is a hole in the rules. It's very obvious. And the only way that something like this gets fixed is if it gets abused, and it has to be fixed. If this is not fixed next season, I do not understand what we're doing. I don't know how you do it. The thing that would come to mind off the top of my head is either A, you have to spend a timeout, or the player can't come in for the rest of the quarter. It has to be something that is very, very punishing. I don't know how you do it.
But with that, you know, I talked to it with a couple of people at the game, you know, actually before the game, you know, when we were watching the clip from the Ole Miss and Kentucky game, and I think maybe you should make it a, I mean, either a penalty or like at least make it reviewable, like you were saying. To have it to where if the player has to sit out, you obviously have to make it a reviewable, like, penalty type situation to where, like, the opposing coach says, you know, go look at it, and they have to go look at it, which is going to take, you know, a little. Some people might be upset that it's another review, but then you could look at the review, see that they're not hurt, they go down, and that's when you could say he has to sit out the rest of that quarter.
Well, I think the tough thing is that you don't want to get to the point where you're just straight up telling guys, okay, you're not hurt. Like, it's not real,
yeah.
Right? And I think that the whole sitting out a quarter thing is a decent balance to, like, hey, if you're actually hurt, like, yeah, the soonest you probably would come in would be, you know, in a quarter, whatever. It gives you some time to, like, sit and rest and fix whatever it is versus, like, you know, there still has to be a substantial enough penalty to de-incentivize you from doing it. I don't know exactly how you do it. I know that I don't really want to. It's very hard to be like, is this person injured? Like, straight up, right? Because then we get into all kinds of...
Well, you know, that's why it has, to me, it has to be, like, to where you go, you look at it, and you see that it wasn't, like, right after he got hit. This is literally, they're just waiting to start a play. A quarterback motions his hand to the running back, and he just falls down. Like, that either has to be take a timeout or a 15-yard penalty or sit out. It has to do something, but you obviously can't. I don't, even with, like, an injured player, you can't just be like, oh, you have to wait the entire quarter. Like, I mean, unless it's a head injury, you know.
It's a problem. It needs to be fixed. It's just like the transition take foul in the NBA. They made it so that you can't just kill fast breaks and kill fun of the game. It's the same kind of thing. Needs to be fixed. It's a problem.
I'm going to say at ACC officials who reviewed the end of the Miami-Virginia Tech game, do you guys know how the review thing works? Because typically, like, you have to have indisputable video evidence that's contrary to the call in the field. Did you know that that's how that works? Did you know that that's how the rule is written? I don't think you do. I understand that you guys really love the U, that you really want them to do well. You don't have to fabricate stuff, okay? Let a stinker team beat them.
Did you know that there is no standard officiating, like, handbook across the NCAA? All the conferences have different officiating handbooks.
I feel like we listen to the same shows sometimes.
Yeah, Josh Pate talked about this. Yeah, it was fantastic. That was a great point. Shout out Josh Pate, of course.
But yeah, for me on that game, you know, just real quick, you know, I actually thought it was incomplete at first. I do agree with you. Like, you ruled it a touchdown, so, like, figure something out. But I think the most tragic part of that game was when Virginia Tech ran that ridiculous fake field goal. Now, for my beef of the week, and this is very similar to one that I have had in the past, you know, there's been an issue, especially at this university, with a lot of the majority of the students being from outside of the state of Alabama, that they're fans of all these other teams. So I brought it up last year on one of our Beef of the Weeks about students wearing other teams' gear around campus, in the weight room, you know. Now it's worse. And some of them weren't students, I know that, but seeing other teams and universities' gear at Alabama football games, or at, I mean, I assume it happens at other places too, but, and, like, you know, sometimes I get it. Like, obviously, you're going to, like, this weekend, you're going to see Alabama, you're going to see Georgia. I have a person that I know, he's not an Alabama fan. If he comes to an Alabama game, he at least wears the other team's stuff, even if he's not a fan of them. So, like, you at least fit in. This game, I saw, well, so the first person I saw wore a Colts hat. So I'm like, one, why are you wearing blue? And that's the NFL, so it doesn't really matter. But I saw people in Tennessee jerseys. I saw a person in a Miami hoodie. I saw a person in Ohio State. You know, I'm just seeing all this. And, you know, before the game, we saw how there were, I think it was StubHub released that there were buyers from 49 states that bought tickets to this game. And I'm like, I understand, like, you want to go to the game, you want to go to the best game of the week, but, like, how about we not wear, like, I don't know if you're, like, some of them look like they could have been students, I don't know, but if you're going to a game, at least wear the colors or the gear of one of the teams that's involved in the game. Don't wear a Peyton Manning Tennessee jersey when you're at an Alabama Georgia game.
Yeah, Yeah, I agree. I think all the beasts of the week.
That's not a hot
very
take
solid.
No, that's
Miami should have a loss right now. Virginia Tech got robbed. The Hokies. You're in my heart.
As much as I really dislike the Hokies, my heart goes out to you.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on the Low Tide here this week. Join us again next week, same time. Thank you for listening.